This edition of Culture with Robert Bound was first broadcast on the 15th of February 2016. Hello and welcome to Culture with me, Robert Bound, where this week we're asking, how do you know what to read? You think you know, don't you? But how do you know? Who knows? There are thousands of titles published every month. We all have a list longer than our lifespan of novels we want to inhabit, biographies we want to learn from, and books we want to read and say that we've read. Reading lists are where good intentions curdle sometimes, and so we thought we'd shine a light on the decision-making process and get some help along the way. I wonder if it's only me that feels that they've read a dozen book reviews only to turn up to the bookshop without a clue in their head. Whoops. In order to answer the question, how do you know what to read, then we'll get a session with a reading consultant.
What I hear the most is that they say, I had no idea that that book was actually that important to me till I really had to think about it. And why is something so important to you? Why do you read about a lot of characters who are actually quite similar to you, or the opposite? And that's something I think people never really think about.
We'll speak to a literary critic about how you review and what. Plus, we'll visit a bookshop to learn how they choose what goes on that all-important recommendations table, and we'll end up in Belgrade to marvel at one man's business that turns what he wants to read into Serbian essentials. Do you read me? We hope you will in about 29 and a half minutes' time. That little lot is all to come on Culture with me, Robert Bound, on Monocle 24. Stay tuned. All right, we're asking, how do you know what to read on today's show? And first of all, we're going to trial a nice idea from a new business called Get Booked. The reading consultancy, for that is what it is, was recently founded by literary agent Lisette Verhagen to help people that love reading but need a little helping hand through the wild wood of what is out there. So you sign up and complete an online questionnaire that asks you when you read, what you read, which bits of prose you fancy most, and which genres you wouldn't touch with a barge pole. The form itself is a clever bit of writing and satisfying to fill out. You might surprise yourself. Then comes a consultation in which Lisette will match you to books that you like while challenging you to try something new. It's interesting stuff, halfway between a book club, a chat with a well-read new friend, and a session on an analyst's couch. It satisfies a curiosity about books and about ourselves. What a good idea. So after filling out my form, I went off to my consultation to have my bookish palm read.
First of all, like, where do you normally get your recommendations from?
Well, I'm kind of in a strange position. I get sent lots of books to review for the magazine, being one of the editors of the magazine. But there is nothing greater than looking at the sort of table in the airport when you're about to go on holiday, and suddenly you read with a different speed, or I read with a different intention, I suppose. And there's nothing nicer, I guess, than getting a recommendation from a friend.
And in a questionnaire, you said you read a lot as a kid. Was that something very common in your family to read? Are your parents big readers?
My parents, always remember my parents really reading the newspaper, being really busy, working very hard, working long hours and all the rest of it. And there being a lot of books on the bookshelves, but them being maybe quite referencey, not more reference books than novels, big heavy atlases, encyclopedias and things like that, rather than lots of novels. So I think maybe I put more novels on the shelves than were already there when I was a kid. Lots of adventure stories, you know, the kind of stuff. But we get sophisticated when we grow up, especially when you're a horrible teenager and you start reading things that are wildly more advanced than you are. Read them for show. Do you know what I mean? I mean, that happens. That you must have met people like that.
Can you name some like titles? Like, what type of books did you read to impress your other teenage friends?
I remember reading a book called A Dead Man in Deptford by Anthony Burgess, which was about the death of Christopher Marlowe, who's a contemporary of Shakespeare, who wrote Dr. Faustus. And probably maybe taking in a sixth of the book and the rest of it. And it was sort of written also in kind of Elizabethan blank verse or something. I thought that made me look really clever. And it probably gave me headaches for 10 years afterwards. I think you read what you think your heroes read. When you're a teenager as well, you're really open to the idea of heroes, aren't you? You're kind of looking for some sort of literary father figure or something, or mother figure. And I suppose you follow those people. So I was really into Oscar Wilde and Noel Coward, and I was into sort of wit, you know, wits, I suppose mm-hmm. you'd call them. And I kind of love that world, that kind of slightly fin de siècle kind of end of the 19th century kind of thing as well. It was kind of very attractive. So I suppose it is quite flowery and flouncy sort of stuff, although with a kind of, with a backbone of iron and amazing hard work on behalf of the writers. That was the bit I liked the least about them, I suppose. But it, back in the day, you read the things that set up the things you're going to read later in life. So if you maybe you like Martin Amis, then maybe you read his father, or you read some, or you maybe read Dickens even, or you read or you read Nabokov mm-hmm. or something. You go back in time to what they, what you know they like, and then, you know, Nabokov maybe makes you read other Russian authors. There is always a connection between every book, one book and the next that you read. To take this outside of our chat for a minute, Lizette, do you find that people have, in your experience of doing this, people have heroes, people kind of have a sort of aspiration, reading it is an aspiration for a lot of people?
There are not a lot of readers, unfortunately, anymore that go also check all the references and do cross-reading books. So actually, you're quite I heard of them, and I'm really, really happy that I now finally...
You've got a really weird specimen on your hand.
And I finally met someone who actually does that. But normally, people are a lot more driven by what's in the bookstores and what is at the moment in the papers, what is reviewed. I saw also like on the questionnaire where you have to choose what type of writing style you prefer. I saw that you chose for more descriptions and instead of first person narrative. And that is always, not always, but often related to literary writing, where it's more important that the plot is not as important as the style and the language. And I think Martin Amis is a good example because he's absolutely known for the language, which is so beautifully done. So I think that's, I can totally see where that's coming from. Do you read fiction in translation?
Yes, and actually one of the things I wish I'd written down was I've read all of Javier Marías's books. He's a Spanish author, and I loved all of his books, and they're quite surreal. But he's a Spanish writer from Madrid, and he writes, but he only writes in Spanish. And I think he translates other Spanish writers into English. So his English is obviously perfect, but he doesn't want to be constricted by writing in English. So he writes all his fiction in Spanish and has it translated. So that's someone I should have written down. Javier Marías, I think, is fantastic. Okay, Lizette, so I'm getting a little bit restless on the analyst's couch here because I really want to know what books you've got in the bag by the side of your chair there. What does your doctor's note say?
Well, if I look at our whole session and if I also look at the questionnaire you filled out before, I think there are some things we can work on still, and we can encourage you to read the things you're already reading. But one of the things I definitely think you should read is the work of Roberto Bolaño. He is from Chile. He writes a lot about Mexico, or he wrote, because he passed away in a few years ago. You mentioned that you like eccentric works. You like to be... you love different storylines, you like to lose yourself in a literary labyrinth, and I think that's why you should be reading Roberto Bolaño. Something entirely different, but you read a lot of middle-aged men. So I think it would be good for you to also read a bit of like women. And I'm definitely thinking, if I see about your list and what you normally read, I think you should definitely read Lydia Davis. She's an American short story writer. Her collection of short stories are super clever. Clever observations. I absolutely love her work, and I think you too. And then we also give a challenge in this session. So I want to try to give something for readers normally would not read. And you have a lot of literary, beautiful literary authors on your list, but I think it would be good to make your read also something more entertaining, a little bit light, and something you can read in a few hours and enjoy yourself with. I'm thinking about, because also to make you read a little bit more in translation, I think about Herman Koch, a Dutch author, and his thriller, The Dinner. It's very well written, so you will like that. Fast-paced, plot-driven, because it's a thriller, and it is full of graphic descriptions and black humor. And you mentioned humor also a few times, so I think you would like that. And the best thing about the book is that it has a very unreliable narrator, and that's something I can really, really enjoy.
I asking people what they read is a strangely personal thing. Where do you read? What's the feeling like? What did you read it about when you were a child? And I wonder whether your clients that get booked find this a personal experience and kind of like it. We've kind of joked this afternoon about it being a bit like lying on an analyst's couch, but there is an element to that. There is an element to sort of boring down into people and what makes them tick by being able to recommend books to them on such a personal level. And such a professional level, I suppose. But do you think people really enjoy filling out that questionnaire and enjoy having books chosen for them and talking about themselves through the prism of the books that they read?
I actually do. And it's something I totally underestimated when I started this, because I was really thinking people really want to have books. And that's definitely true. But another part is that it's kind of like nice to get a list of books, which is also kind of a soundtrack of your book. So I get that, yeah, the clients who come back to me, and what I hear the most is that they say, I had no idea that that book was actually that important to me till I really had to think about it. And why is something so important to you? And why do you like books written in the first person, or wide scope books? Or why do you read about a lot of characters who are actually quite similar to you, or the opposite? And that's something I think people never really think about. And sometimes it's really personal, and a lot personal than I also expected. People tell about very moving stuff, what happened in the last year, because I ask questions as, what is the most challenging thing, what happened in the last year, also to link characters to or storylines to their stories, so they can maybe read similar things. And I'm really surprised how open people are and how beautiful like stories come out of that.
That was Lisette Verhagen, founder of Get Booked. To get your bookish tea leaves read, head to getbooked.net. Next on our literary hit list is The Critic. Formerly the book critic for the National Post, Emily Keeler is now senior editor for Walrus magazine in Canada, where she continues to review books for the monthly periodical that some say is the Northern Nation's answer to Harper's. Monocle's deputy bureau chief in Toronto, Jason Lee, spoke with her about how she decides which books end up in the magazine and the importance of the book reviewer to readers.
I think for me, books are an excellent way to be alone without being alone. I'm the oldest in my family by 6 years, and then my brothers are 6 and 7 years younger than me. I'm the only girl. I think that it was kind of necessary for me to figure out a way to hang out by myself in that context. And it turns out that a great way to do that is to connect with literature.
Not many book lovers turn into book reviewers, so how did that happen?
That's true. I was incredibly fortunate. In 2010, I had a pretty boring office job, and I've kind of felt my mind atrophying. I stopped really reading, and I kind of became this person I didn't really recognize. So I set a New Year's resolution in 2011 to basically just up my game. I started a blog, and I wrote about a book that I read every week. I decided I would read 50 books in that year, and I wrote very like minor amateurish essays about it. But nonetheless, these minor and amateurish essays found an audience online, and that was a really exciting thing. So at the end of that year, when that project came to a close, I had been invited by a bunch of different editors to write for different newspapers and for web magazines and for print magazines. And it just kind of spiraled out of control, and now this is my life.
Tell me a little bit about the role of the book reviewer. I think today's world, there's so many things vying for our attention and our energy. I think the book reviewer is becoming more important because there's an increasing number of books and they take more time to read than, say, go watch a film, right? Can you tell me a little bit more on how you see your role as a book reviewer?
I think that one thing it's important for reviewers to keep in mind is that we're not talking to consumers, we're talking to readers. So a review should do more than tell people whether or not they should buy the book. It should be complicit in a ecosystem of circulating ideas. So with the same example of Ghalib Islam, the piece that I was writing, yes, it was a strong endorsement of how thoroughly enjoyable I found this novel, but it also hopefully was opening up a conduit to think about things that he was thinking about and to appreciate literature in a context that is bigger than just, should I buy it or should I not buy it? What to read is whatever you feel like it. No matter who you are, that's what to read. If you have no professional obligation to read a book, you're reading for enjoyment, for edification, anything like that. for emotional connection to an idea. That's what books can do. And that's amazing. That's why you're reading. Choosing that book is where people like me come in, I guess, and what I choose to assign for review. So the most unfortunate reality is that book reviews are only ever going to be about books that came out at some point within 1 week or 2 weeks of when you were reading the book review. In an ideal world, all readers would have their spirits would be open to books from all times. Basically, I think that a reader should be reading no more than 10 books a year that came out in that year, because otherwise you're getting a very skewed perspective of what literature can do. In terms of choosing books to assign for review, personally, for me, there's a formula that takes into account how much are people going to be talking about this book. If the answer is people are going to be talking about it a lot, there is a sense that we should figure out what we need to say that's different about what the book people are going to be talking about is. Although sometimes if people are going to be talking a lot about the book, it's also okay to let it slide if we can't find the new thing to say. And in its place, maybe we'll champion something that we're worried is not going to get the recognition that it might be deserving of. A book review ideally is not actually about the book per se, it's about the ideas in the book. It's about giving a platform to embolden the culture to be readerly, to think through these things in language.
What's the dynamic like between you and the publisher?
Good publishers, as individuals and as members of a team at a publishing company, they actually want the same things I want. They want smart readers to have strong feelings about books, strong enough to buy them, strong enough to argue about them, strong enough to have them be a significant enough part of their lives that it's a going concern. Sure, I've had some uncomfortable situations both with authors and publishers where maybe I've assigned a review of a book that was panned, perhaps, and I run into someone at a party or something. It can be a little bit chilly, but eventually we all move on, because it's not about an individual book, it's about a culture and a community of reading, and that is much bigger than any one of the three principal actors in that case involved.
That was Emily Keeler, senior editor at Walrus Magazine, speaking to Monocle's Jason Lee. After the break, we'll be perusing the aisles of Powell's City of Books in Portland for some staff picks, and we'll meet a man in Belgrade who was so fed up with the choice of translated books up for grabs that he set up his own bloody publishing house. You're listening to Culture with me, Robert Bound, and today we're asking, how do you know what to read? We've had a session with a reading consultant, and we've spoken to a literary critic to sort the fictional sheep from the biographical goats. But what about the bookshop itself? The recommendations table is a potent magnet for potential purchases, surely. Powell's City of Books is the largest used and new bookstore in the world, occupying an entire city block in downtown Portland, Oregon, and housing approximately 1 million books. Each room in the store is designated a different colour, which corresponds to a like-minded section. So it's no wonder then that their vast and mighty staff are knowledgeable and passionate about their reads. Melanie Sevchenko took a short tour with one bookseller, Kevin Samsel, to talk about how Powell's recommends a book through what they call a shelf talker, a little paper blurb that hangs off the bookshelf, and how they represent their numerous staff picks.
As booksellers, we get excited about a book. We want people to experience the book, and so a lot of us, I think, are really good at translating that into a shelf talker. All the shelf talkers on displays like this are usually handwritten by various staff, and you'll see that throughout the store and all the rooms. Right now, there's this thing going on called the Tournament of Books, and so we have a display of all the books that are in the Tournament of Books, which is sort of like college basketball brackets, where these different book critics talk about these books sort of competing against each other, and they pick one book to advance, and then it goes to like a championship kind of round. It's really fun. This year in the Tournament of Books, we have things like The Invaders and The Whites. That's Richard Price, John Irving's newest Avenue of Mysteries. One of our employees is a really big fan of Oreo by Fran Ross, and I think that's kind of an underdog for this competition. If you just walk through the aisles, just like in the sections, you'll see staff picks, smatterings of these different shelf talkers. Like, these are really fun, these ones that say, if you liked this, then try this. I actually wrote this shelf talker here because one of my friends was like totally raving about that book, so I was like, okay, I'll talk it up. And it says, if you liked Emily Bronte and epic novels, then try A True Novel by Japanese star Mine Mizumura. Me personally, if I see a book that I'm really excited about that I've read, and I realize that there's no shelf talker next to it, then I'll definitely take the time to write something about it. I tend to read stuff that's maybe not super popular, like in the mainstream, and so I like to write shelf talkers to bring attention to books published by newer authors or like small presses. And I think that's really exciting to do as a bookseller, to show people new things. And it's also great for the authors and the publishers. Here, against the wall, is the small press section. This is a section that you don't see in very many bookstores. There's a lot of really tiny presses that don't have really big distribution, big budgets to promote themselves, often work with just one or no distributors. So all these shelf talkers, most of them you'll see are probably in my handwriting. I like hearts. I put hearts sometimes on the stars. I do stars. Yeah, that's kind of my crutch. That is another thing that we get pretty often, several times a day, almost every hour in every room, where someone will come up and say, you know, I'm stuck, I need a recommendation, or it'll be either for themselves, you know, they'll be like, I really like Gillian Flynn books, but I read all of them now, like, what should I read next? Or you get people who are buying something for somebody, like, you know, my girlfriend really likes this poet, what's another poet that's like that's not cheesy? It's really fun to break it down for customers. Usually the first question I ask when people ask for a recommendation, because I have kind of weird tastes and sometimes they don't know who I'm talking about, so I'll ask them like what they've read recently. I think all of us here have customers that come in and recognize certain booksellers and ask, you know, like, oh, I really liked that Paul Auster book, which one should I read next? Or, you know, I really like that Jhumpa Lahiri book. Does she have something new coming out? And we help them figure out what they're going to do next. One of the funnest kind of customers to get are customers who are kind of like newer readers and like younger people. They're like, yeah, I'm just kind of like, I'm really getting into reading, and I really liked Kurt Vonnegut and Tom Robbins. Who else should I read? And it's like, well, I'll try Richard Brautigan. My favorites are when people ask, like, what's the weirdest, most darkest thing you've read? And I say, oh, I don't know. It kind of depends. Like, you know, do you want it to be funny or do you want it to be, like, bleak?
That was Kevin Samsel, bookseller at Powell's City of Books in Portland, Oregon, speaking to Melanie Sevchenko. We're going to wrap things up in Belgrade with a trip to a publisher. Of course, language is a major factor in what we choose to read. If publishers don't translate books into a language we can understand, then we'll never pick them up, of course. English is pretty well served, but readers in non-Anglophone countries aren't always so lucky. Ivan Bevs found the books he wanted to read weren't getting translated into Serbian, so he started his own Belgrade-based publishing company. It's called Buka, and it carefully selects books from around the world before translating and presenting them in stylish covers. Our correspondent Guy Delorne met Ivan to find out about the Buka philosophy.
The philosophy is, basically to find new contemporary authors which will become classics, like in a 10 or 20 or 50 years from now.
So where are you looking for these new classics?
Well, looking everywhere, you know. I'm looking, of course, mostly on the internet. I'm following some very interesting websites which brings information about new books. I also know a lot about literature because I'm reading for my whole life. And I'm following some important awards and nominations and still. But also, you know, I'm reading recommendations by some smart people somewhere, and it leads me to some very interesting places. So that's how we find very interesting new authors, because the idea is to bring to a Serbian audience new, fresh authors, new, fresh voices, and of course to bring them in the best possible way.
Why have you had to start up a company to do this? What was happening with the existing publishing houses in Serbia?
Well, as mentioned, I like to read books a lot. And then I mentioned that there is a certain gap, that there is a niche which we can fulfill, the niche with the new, fresh authors, because there are a lot of publishers in Serbia and this market is growing. But you have very commercial big publishing houses, or some small who are devoted to some interesting original authors, but I think they're lacking some information from abroad and they don't follow really what's going on with the contemporary literature. We also were lucky because some big authors were still free. It's funny because in Serbia there were no interested publishers in authors like, for example, Michel Houellebecq or Karl Ove Knausgård, just to mention a few most famous. So it was a chance, and we we just took it.
I'm just actually looking down the list in the inside flap of your book here. I mean, these are not small names. As you say, Michel Houellebecq, Hanif Qureshi, Ryuichi Murakami, Dave Eggers.
Well, some of these authors were published in Serbian before, but these publishing houses, they were not doing good business with them, and also international literary agents were not satisfied with them. So we approached them, we showed them what we do, that we are really paying special attention on quality of translation, of proofreadings, and a very important thing on design. So we hired some of the leading young Serbian designers to make packages, to create covers. And now we are recognized as the publisher with the most originally designed books and, I must say, most beautiful.
What about the matter of what you publish? You've mentioned that as an interested reader, you'll be following the awards, the reviews all around the world. But what is it that pushes a particular book past the bar at which Booker will decide that they want to translate this and publish it in Serbia?
I like authors who are doing experiments, who are wanted to maybe go a step forward, and I wanted them to be original, you know. So I don't like authors who are trying to write like other authors because it's now fashionable. But for example, I mentioned Karl Ove Knausgård. He really made something which Proust did hundreds of years ago. He really pushed everything forward, and I think like in 10, 20, 50 years, this age will be called like Knausgård time or something. People are discovering him here in Serbia, and he's becoming cult author, and we are really doing big efforts on this, and I'm really happy that people are recognizing it.
You mentioned already that you've got this community online that will suggest possible books for you to publish as Booker. Have you got a good sense now of who your readers are?
It's really, you know, wide. It's easy to say, oh, you know, they are young urban people or something. But it's funny, we have young urban people, but we also have a lot of people who are ordering our books like through internet, but they live in very, very small cities or even villages in Serbia. And they're regular customers, and they, you know, write us emails saying that we really like saved their lives, or we opened the window to the world to them because they didn't know that so many new authors exist around. They thought that all the good literature was already written, but of course it's not true. Each time has their geniuses and their Tolstoys and Dostoevskys. So you will always find new. So our readers are all people who are open-minded. And who really like to make an experiment and who really like to explore what's new and what fresh and new they can have from literature.
That was Ivan Bevs, founder of Booker Publishers in Belgrade, and that is spelled B-O-O-K-A. And he was speaking to Guy Delaunay, of course. So how do you know what to read? Recommendations seem like the best route, whether it's reading a critic in the press or trying a new service like Get Booked. We quite like to hear someone else's mind before making up our own and plumping for a title. Then there's the point of sale itself, the bookshop. Bookshops, of course, have a vested interest in making you buy, but also in ensuring that you buy well. There's nothing worse than struggling through a dud. And we've heard too that translation is vital. A book appearing in your native tongue can make the world of difference. There's a lot of instinct at play here too. Getting a feeling for genre through the design of a book cover goes a long way to making our minds up. How do you know what to read? Trust your instinct, but don't be shy to ask for some help. And that brings us to the end of today's show. And if we've left you hungry for reading fodder, then be sure to listen to our weekly book discussion every Thursday on the Monocle Arts Review, or head to the culture section of Monocle magazine for a few more recommendations. You've been listening to Culture. My producer was our favourite thriller, Holly Fisher. Join me again at the same time next week. But for the time being, I've been Robert Bound. And thanks for tuning in.